Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast. My name is Ed Mallion, and I am here today for the return. How long is it since you've been in the studio, Miguel Delaney?
Four or five weeks
where we've been inundated with messages saying, where is Miguel? Please tell me he's never coming back. And then you're here. So what have you been doing?
Loads of football journalism.
Really good answer. Jack Pitbrook, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very well, thanks.
You've not been shirking as much as Miguel, so you have been here.
I can't remember when I was last in here. This week is not as nice. Last weekend's podcast, Miguel and I recorded from the rooftop of our hotel in Seville, and it was soundtracked by the clopping of horses' hooves on the cobbled street outside. This is not as nice. I'm sorry, Ed.
No, it isn't as nice. We are in London, but the action that we're going to be talking about took place about a mile and a half up the road. Chelsea versus Manchester United, which is probably, let's face it, the biggest story in English football this weekend. So, Miguel, do you want to get going with your thoughts on what? I've got to be honest, I thought it was a good day for Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, I think so. Despite conceding a last-minute equaliser, I tell United responded well, performed well. I think there were more positives than negatives despite that. And he even got to, you know, be the bigger man in a little country.
Well, you know, the little man, as Conte called him, right?
You know, I've accepted the apology.
He was in the right.
He wasn't the right.
The Chelsea coach, inexplicably, just absolutely going for him in the celebration at the end there. I stupidly turned it off on about 85 mins. Jack Pitbrook, you did the same?
Yeah, I was at the London Stadium, and on about 92 minutes, I thought, oh, this is done, isn't it? I'm going to do the long, slow journey up to the press box. And I got there, checked Twitter, and it all kicked off.
Yeah. So,
one thing I'd say actually,
go on.
As well, I still don't think Chelsea that good.
Do you think they've been carried by Hazard?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, obviously, you can see what they're trying to do, and I think Sarri's obviously a very good manager, and ultimately it's promising and good, but I think they're still some way off the best Sarri footballer we know. I mean, for all the talk of Sarri ball, they're not really playing it yet. They're a bit loose to back. They're not. I mean, that's just one thing I expected. I thought United would sit deep and Chelsea would struggle to open them. But then, of course, United conceded yet another set piece, and it kind of forced United out. And that's one thing about United now as well, basically. It feels like it needs to require circumstances rather than a plan to bring out their best game. And they've thrived in chaos twice now. But on the whole, then, I think they're just, from that regard, it was still more positive. You can see there's more, there can actually be more to United in that way.
But do you think they can ever get, like, regularity, United, given what you just said?
I mean, ultimately, it's hard to escape the kind of wider context, which that we think that Mourinho will likely go at the end of the season.
You think so? Yeah. Well, there were some murmurs out of Madrid, which is a story I guess we should get onto later on, that he is interesting, Florentino Perez. I don't know if that makes... Yeah. I mean, I actually think it does make sense for him in many ways. I think if I was in Mourinho's shoes, sensing the direction that things are heading at Manchester United, I would be doing everything I could to try and entice Florentino.
Given how bad and out of his control things looked, say, 3 weeks ago from Mourinho, 2 weeks ago, it's creditable the way he's managed to turn this situation now. It feels like he's the one in control, and he could set it now.
It's funny because when they were 2-0 down to Newcastle, it felt very kind of November 2015. Yeah, whereas since then, it doesn't feel as much like that, does it?
Yeah. Well, the Newcastle result came back and did well. The Chelsea result came back and did well,
and they were dreadful first half.
So what my kind of rough thoughts on the game? I have to say, I wasn't there. I was just watching on TV. but I was close enough that I could hear the... I heard the crowd when they scored through the window. They are Man United far too passive, basically. Yeah. That first half, the first half was really just unimpressive. Just incredibly unimpressive.
You have a fundamental problem there as well. And to be fair, this isn't completely on Mourinho, given that when you appoint Mourinho, maybe you've got to build a team that he wants. But there's this clash between the profile of the squad and what he wants to do with them. So they're not built for his ideal football, which is a solid base, counter-attacking. They don't have a solid base. I mean, he tried to sit back on Saturday, concede another goal from a set piece. And they've got so many, at the very least, promising attackers that you could do so much more with.
But he is managing, right? The thing is, like, it's almost a paradox within the way that Mourinho likes to play, is that he likes rigid kind of players who are going to perform the exact tasks he asks and all that sort of stuff. But he's at the level now where he coaches at clubs where they have to buy superstars. Yeah. And it's superstar elite attacking talents, right? So then it's like, okay, well, that's fine, because Mourinho presumably will coach this team so it's defensively solid, and then the elite attacking players, the talent, will create stuff out of nothing. And I mean, even like so the goal that Martial scored, which by the way is a great finish, terrific touch, he kind of takes it on his thigh and then volleys home. But I mean, that goal is very agricultural, really, isn't it? You know, it's some long ball stuff and it's broken play.
Miguel, you were talking about Martial's positioning before the game and during the game. What did you make of his role and his performance?
I mean, I suppose he's a player that needs that kind of freedom. I mean, this again comes back down to, I suppose, how Mourinho manages, and that the ultimate problem with someone like Martial is basically, and I think why he's had such difficulty with United, same with Rashford, there are players that need a bit of space to breathe. So inevitably, I think at the start of runs, or because they're age, they're going to have like one good game, maybe two kind of medium games in a row. But then Mourinho immediately hooks them, and also he puts these. I mean, you see from the United's first half where the main requirement of the attackers, it wasn't so much they're going to sit deep, but it was basically to kind of block off what their Chelsea opposite numbers are doing. So we had Mata marking Jorginho, you had Martial kind of trying to pin Azpilicueta back, you had Rashford way back on Alonso. Then in the second half, when they had a chase game, there's obviously more space. Yeah. And also they're putting a Chelsea defence under pressure. It doesn't do well under pressure yet, as good as some of those players like David Luiz are on the ball. And we saw what Martial is capable of. That's a bit footballese, isn't it? But what he's capable of.
He justified his selection. Do you think that we will? Do you think this will signal any change in Martial's role, or what Martial does in the team going forward?
No. I mean, ultimately, it's still impossible to get away from this dynamic where this pattern will continue. He'll continue. He'll have kind of an odd one game in five, but it's not enough for Mourinho. And imagine that's two in a row now. To be fair. If he can get a run of confidence, or get a run where he develops his confidence, you would hope we see the true Martial. But I'm just not sure how possible it is.
Bigger picture, do you still think United will continue to go kind of one step forward, two steps back? Or one step forward, one step back, rather?
Yeah, maybe
the next
one and
few
a half
months.
Step forward and one back.
Oh, well, you think the general trend will be upwards?
I think, to be fair, for... let's be like, on the morning of the Newcastle game, halftime of the Newcastle game, we completely expected this.
R.I.P.
This is over. And I think, I wouldn't be entirely sure it's down to any connection Mourinho has with the squad, but I think there is a credit deserved for everyone there that's two responses they put in really difficult circumstances in a row. And at Chelsea, say 2015-16, that just wouldn't happen.
One thing I was thinking is, it does suggest that the United players have more, like individually and collectively, they have more pride in basically not being shit than that Chelsea team did 3 years ago, who were completely happy to debase themselves to get rid of the manager, have been over the years.
As well as, I think the relationship between the United players and Mourinho, which is awkward, and not many of them particularly like him or been enjoying the 2 years, especially because of how changeable his moods can be. But it's just nowhere near how broken it was at Chelsea.
Yeah. What Chelsea going forward? Do you think it's like a gelling issue, and in a few months' time they'll be better, or do you think that they need additions, especially in defence, to be able to make this sort of Anna's number nine to be able to make this work?
I think Morata's a problem.
that, I think that was the most obvious thing from watching them, is if they had a striker, if they had a goal scorer, because you look at who did well for Napoli under Sarri, having Higuain, who's just a finisher, and he's just a finisher. But because they play so much of their game in the opposition half, and because they have the ball and they create these chances where you just need a guy who's just going to snap it home. Yeah. Morata is not that guy. Like he's not looked like that guy at all. You'd rather have almost like a... It's a bit like when Spain were kind of choosing between Morata and Paco Alcácer. Yeah. You'd much rather have a Paco than a Morata in this spot, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's so frustrating, Morata, because basically he's got everything bar the mentality, it seems. Because he's really talented. I talking to someone connected to Chelsea since then, basically saying that a lot of the talk around the club is now that he looks almost worse than Torres was when he went there. Like, it's that bad.
But without the excuse of like burnout. Torres at the age of 23.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Torres had played so much football by then, and really it was that injury at Liverpool when he tried to get himself fit for the World Cup.
Yeah,
he never felt the same after that.
Morata reminds me a little of Andre Gomes when he went to Barcelona or something, or a player who just, they look like I can see no way in which they get it back without leaving the club, change, go somewhere where you're going to be happier. Like, it doesn't look like it's going
to
work.
Is he suited to being the sub he was at Real Madrid? Because it's just less pressure. I mean, it means, because it flips the situation, right? Rather than being the player who all the onus is on and he's expected to do it, he's someone then... It's the reverse, where he comes on and, you know, if he gets something, it's a bonus, or he saves them, rather than kind of, you know...
Even when he was at Juve, he was like, there wasn't that much onus on him. They always had, like, Tevez, Llorente, other more experienced centre-forwards who could be the main man.
Yeah. I think he'd be interesting if you were playing... You know, we've seen more teams play almost like a 4-4-2, where you've got, like, the split strikers. I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, where... you know, like Lucas Moura playing with Harry Kane is basically like a Sheringham was back in the day. And I think Morata's role is probably that. He's really good at linking up, dropping in and linking up. He's good at, you know, he's good with the ball at his feet, but he just doesn't seem to have any sort of, then like when the ball comes to him, he doesn't ever seem to be like kind of thinking, how can I turn towards goal? Yeah. Like, you never see him kind of like, when a player gets a ball in the positions he gets it, which is often within like 3-4 yards of the penalty area, back to goal. How many times do you see him try and roll the defender? Which I think is a basic Never. Element of the role he's playing. Is the defender has to be scared that you're going to try and go beyond him. And a lot of that's just how you use your body. And like we've seen a lot of strikers who are very, very good at that. I mean, Diego Costa was an absolute genius at it, where you put your body between the defender and the ball. And if you feel like you've got that solid base and you've got the defender, then... when the ball comes, you can either let it roll right or you can let it roll left. They have to be scared that you're going to go in behind to allow you to then actually cut back and maybe just dink the ball, lay the ball off to someone. If they're not afraid of penetration, if they're not afraid you're going to go beyond them, if they're not afraid you're going to go beyond them, then it's like it's too one-dimensional. Yeah. So with Morata, he's playing with his back to goal, but with no...
He doesn't look like he wants to score goals, does he? He doesn't look like he wants to get in the box.
He
reminds me of the legend, Big Vinny Jansen. who's, with all due respect, the worst striker I've ever seen. And not someone who ever looked like he wanted to score a goal. Like, he would never get in the box, he would never make runs, he would always come short, lay the ball off, would never turn and run in behind.
There is kind of an interesting dynamic there. I was just thinking, as Ed was saying it, about his confidence. Before, when Morata was meant to go to United or Chelsea that summer, I did a piece where I spoke to a lot of people who knew him in his background, and they talked about the type of character he was and that. And if you think about it, I mean, to get to this level of football, you need a fairly fierce mental resilience to get past all the various barriers. As well as that, he made his name as a striker, he used to kind of score goals at that level. So where does the switch come in?
Is he not the sort of kid who's the equivalent of, like... you know, someone who's just born rich, just had everything in life, just got parachuted into, I went to work for his dad's investment bank, now has like 200 grand, whatever. I'm looking at this guy and I'm saying, came through the Real Madrid Academy, first move from Real Madrid, having basically played a sub role, was to Juve. Yeah. Goes back to Real Madrid, gets flogged for an absolute fortune to Chelsea. You know, I guess it's one of those things where, like, where has his hard test come? Like, it's not like he had 3 seasons on loan at Alaves or anything.
Even in the Madrid Academy, he will have had to he would basically have been selected over hundreds of other boys.
Yeah.
Won't he, every year? Because
talent's not the issue. There's no talent gap there, really.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly phenomenally talented. Like, even just like his first touch is excellent, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing, is you can see how good a player he is, how good a footballer he is. But, yeah, it's almost like sometimes you see a player with a clear mental block. I remember seeing Patrick Bamford a couple of years ago and thinking, like, God, that guy needs to go somewhere else. And, you know, it happens in different positions as well. Say, Andre Gomes at Barcelona needed to get out. Alex McCarthy is another one in goal. And I think Morata is that. I think Chelsea with, you know, I was actually getting a train from Fulham Broadway pretty soon after the Chelsea game. And there were a lot of fans obviously on there. And I heard the name Lewandowski four times, just out of the blue. Yeah. If they had someone like Lewandowski, this team would be completely different. Yeah. But although he was crap last time I saw him for Bayern.
I saw a friend of the podcast, Duncan Alexander.
Great man.
He put some tweet up yesterday with the amount of clear-cut chances that Chelsea have given up compared to Liverpool and City. So there has been a bit of luck where they are. Yeah, I think.
Well, Kepa's played well actually. I mean, no one's really talked about it, and he was very expensive, but he's a good goalkeeper.
I was at Sarri's press conference on Friday, and he was asked about Morata, and I think when a lot of managers say this, it's a line. I don't think it's a line with Sarri. It's really true. I'm not thinking about the market now, because he is focused on basically just training work, which is why I'd have hope for Chelsea, but I think they're some way off.
What do you think Morata needs to do? Do you think it is beyond hope that he could work at Chelsea, or do you think he needs to go to a different environment, a less challenging environment?
Maybe, because I mean, you would maybe give him a few more months under Sarri, maybe just because of what he's trying to do. And you never know, might click at some point. But yeah, it does feel as if it's one of those, you just need the change. Players don't recover unless.
And the thing with someone like Morata is, like, if you're Chelsea, I want to mention they spent €7 million or something like that. Yeah. So you're trying to get as much of that investment back as you can. So you're looking to places where his value is going to be higher. So I'm looking at maybe Valencia, Atletico Madrid, and you try and engineer some sort of swap deal so you lose less of what you've...
Right.
So, you know, if you really like Rodrigo at Valencia, you try and come up with some sort of deal where you get Rodrigo, they get Morata, and both sides are going to be happy. Maybe Atletico Madrid, you really like one of their midfielders. They've got a lot of good midfielders now, and it might be a position that where Atletico are willing to sell because it's a club that permanently needs to balance the books. So yeah, if you can get a Saul, I doubt you can get Rodri, but or Koke or any of those lads in there, Thomas Partey even, this is like the sort of deal I'd try and engineer, because otherwise you're going to make a huge loss on Morata. And the other thing to do is just stick with him and hope it changes, but he does, as we said, seem like a guy who needs a change of scenery.
Yeah. One thing, he's obviously definitively won the battle with Lukaku from the summer of 2017, but look at it. It's like a bit of a problem as well. For someone to score so often, he misses so many big chances, particularly in those games.
He has missed a lot of chances. But
do you think the overall number of goals that he scores obscures the fact that he's not good enough?
Yeah.
Do you think it's very easy?
He is not good enough for Man United then?
I think he's good enough for United, like in their current iteration, which is not very good. Yeah, yeah. But he's not. But for like a kind of idealized, better Manchester United, he's not good enough for that.
Well, I think the problem is that. I guess that going into the season, you're thinking like Man United centre forwards, right? You've got Lukaku, who's probably the first choice in most games. You can play Sanchez through the middle. You know, he's a proven Premier League.
I think you could have played. Someone made that argument to me the other day, and I think it would have been true of like 2015 Alexis Sanchez. But
well,
I think
this was going to be my point. Right? Yeah. So the guy that you thought was going to be the it's almost like, you know, if Lukaku's first choice like 1A, then Sanchez should have been 1B. You know, there shouldn't be a huge drop-off between those two, but the problem is that it's just not the case. Sanchez looked good, has not looked like even like fit or normal. He doesn't look like the player we know. So when they're robbed of that, you've basically got Lukaku, or you can play Martial or Rashford, but Mourinho repeatedly kind of tries to avoid playing Martial or Rashford as a centre-forward for whatever reason.
City must have feel they got out of jail in that one. Thank you, Manchester United.
That would be a good piece, wouldn't it? The kind of alternative history of City signing Sanchez being rubbish, Sanchez tanking that City team like Rodney Marsh in 1975, And
he'd just be on the bench, though, wouldn't he? They'd just be playing Foden and whoever, you know.
Yeah. Pep wouldn't have indulged him. I mean, no. Because even in 09-10 with Barca, how quickly you realise Zlatan doesn't suit his team.
And also, yeah. It's amazing how much better you look when you're getting like served up five chances, right, like 3 yards from goal.
Yeah.
Whereas Lukaku and Sanchez at Man United certainly haven't had that luxury.
Did something with a friend of the party, Ian Wright, recently. He was going on about, we're talking about those great Man United teams that, as a striker, every single one envied Ferguson's Manchester United because the amount of chances you know you're going to get.
Van Nistelrooy, I mean, I know he was great at getting into the right positions and stuff, but yeah. They were always putting the chances there for him to score. And it's the same, like even like when they had Berbatov and players like that, you know, Berbatov is much a creator, I guess, as well. But it is true. You kind of look at that. If you were a centre forward, you'd love to play for Manchester City right now, yeah. Like because of the amount of chances you're getting served up. Playing for Liverpool would be different because you've got to kind of work so hard to get them. Yeah. If you're a lazy centre forward like myself, then you'd want to do that. Anything else you want to say on Man United Chelsea? Which, as I say, I thought it was a good day for Mourinho. I thought United in the second half were by miles the better team, but Chelsea just didn't come out for the second half. And yeah, it's two fight back wins that, yeah, I think Gary Neville said before the Chelsea equaliser, actually, Gary Neville said, you know, this puts to bed all talk of the dressing room not fighting for the manager, which I never think you can draw that exact conclusion, especially because what if Chelsea had come back and scored two at that point, you know? But there is certainly enough fight in this Manchester United team to suggest that they're not going to fall away and die right now.
One that I was thinking of this even yesterday, where, watching Everton Palace, but maybe this is for a media publication that is obviously telling interesting stories. Is the Premier League already? It feels like the table's a bit set, because I think.
Tell me how your
table
breaks down.
The
table's
like throat is sorted already.
City will win by about 10 points. I don't think Liverpool will be good, but I ultimately don't think they have enough about them to sustain it for a season. They'll finish second. Spurs third, Chelsea fourth. I think United will get back together, but maybe still fifth or sixth. I don't think Arsenal are good enough yet, top four.
United are still 7 points off.
Liam Toomey, who's
ESPN's Chelsea correspondent, yeah.
He was saying, like, he made the point last season, Chelsea had that dip, fell off about that much, and just could never recover it. It was just too much to make up. Especially because you don't just need one team to slip, you need two.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, City and Liverpool as well. City and Liverpool are just going to keep winning games. Neither of them have lost yet. Chelsea still haven't lost.
Of course.
Spurs have a really good reliability about them.
Spurs have won as many games as Man City and Liverpool, right?
Yeah. Tottenham have been really good. They've won four in a row. In the league, they won 7 out of 9.
Oh, of course, you were at Spurs West Ham.
It was a really bad game. I can say that now. It was really boring. It was also really bad atmosphere. Like that is traditionally a really good
game.
Should
be a big game, yeah.
Because
yeah.
The two sets of fans absolutely hate each other, and it's usually on TV. And I remember I remember going to a brilliant one in.
It's almost a bubble game. Usually,
there was
isn't
one.
It?
There was one in 2012-13 when Tottenham won 3-2 and Bale scored from 30 yards in the last minute. That was brilliant. There was one in 2015-16, I think, when West Ham won 1-0 at Upton Park. It was the last one of that game at Upton Park, and there was only like three or four games left at Upton Park. And it was when Spurs were really going for the title. And it was one of those like Bilic West Ham performances where everyone played above themselves. There was one last year, I think, where I think West Ham won 1-0 last season. No, they won 1-0 as well in 2016-17. Lanzini scored, and that killed the second Tottenham title challenge. I can't actually remember what happened in that game last season. There was also the one at White Hart Lane where Ravel Morrison scored. Oh yeah, I think was that last year?
I'm not sure listing every West Ham Tottenham game from the last 6 years is great audio.
Well, I don't know. Let's give it a go.
But tell us more about Saturday.
Well, unfortunately, that listing those games would be better than an in-depth discussion Saturday, because Saturday was rubbish. Like, there was no, I think maybe because it was Saturday 3 o'clock, there wasn't much tension. West Ham,
Spurs deserve it.
Yeah, just about. I think West Ham had some good chance. Like, Arnautovic forced 3 saves from Lloris in the second half. But I was never... West Ham looked unbalanced. I still wasn't that impressed with them. I don't think they've got the right combination midfield. even without Wilshere. They missed Obiang. You shouldn't play Yarmolenko and Snodgrass and I've forgotten his name now. The guy they had playing left attacking midfield.
I'll find it.
Felipe Anderson, who was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yarmolenko has torn his Achilles. Yeah, he's going to be out for a long
time. Bad injury. Whereas I thought that Tottenham never really had to play that well, but they were pretty solid. Tottenham also have a lot of injuries. There's no Vertonghen, no Ali. Eriksen came on at the end. So they're far from their best at the moment. But Sissoko played well. Sissoko produced a very good assist for Lamela's goal. Lamela contributed again, his fifth goal of the season. I think he's playing really well at the moment. I've always been a Lamela fan. I think he's kind of improved his game. Like he's making more late runs into the box. Like he used to be just someone who like scurry around fouling people and then pull off a Rabona. Whereas I think he's a bit more effective now. He's a bit more like team oriented.
There are two massive Lamela fans in this room and Miguel.
I think he's a bit more team focused and he could have scored more goals because he's getting in positions all the time. Didn't think Kane was particularly good, but you know they didn't need Eriksen, they didn't need Kane, so that was impressive.
It feels like probably related to the injuries to Ali and Eriksen, say, but it feels like Spurs have lost a little bit of their fizz, but in replace of that, have a real kind of reliability. They're another team with a kind of winning rhythm. They've learned to do enough.
Yeah, they've learned to win ugly. It's funny, like this is they're playing at the moment. I think they're playing worse football than they have done at any point since Pochettino. Like I don't think they've played well this year. Like, not well in the way that they used to play well. You know when, you know, last year, or even more so, 2 years ago, Spurs would present these massive, like, energetic performances where they would just wipe the other team off the face of the earth and win, like, 4-0.
They traditionally only do that, really, took over in the second half of the season.
Right, yeah, from about November, December onwards, right? Yeah. So maybe it'll start soon. But this year they haven't done that at all, and you can point to the stadium or signings or fitness or transfers or whatever, but they are not doing that, but they're doing something else, and it's working really well. And I think that maybe that's just the fact that being in the fourth season with a manager is actually an incredibly privileged thing to be in the Premier League. Like, how many other teams are in that position?
Well, you can almost sleepwalk to those performances.
Yeah, like they found a kind of...
There is an automation process almost ongoing. I just want to say, we won't bother previewing it probably, but Arsenal play Leicester tonight. Leicester are the most boom or bust team in the league. They won 4 and lost 4 of their 8 games. But Arsenal, with a win, would go level with Spurs and Chelsea. I know we're not convinced by them yet, but they aren't out of it. And we are slaves to the XG.
Miguel especially. Let's go back. You can't get enough of it.
Let's board a Ryanair flight. Let's call out the racist passenger on board, and let's head to Madrid. You saw the video, right?
They actually fly to Madrid on Ryanair.
It was Barcelona. Yeah, you probably came from Stansted or Southend or something. But anyway, good aviation knowledge from you. Ryanair to Madrid, where Julen Lopetegui. I wouldn't say he's an Arsene Wenger, he's a bit of an arse. But
City fan, not going to hear anything bad said about him.
Julen Lopetegui, your favourite person. I will never forget the things you were saying about him on the 12th of June 2018 when we were in Moscow. He torpedoed. Now, I'm going to, from the outset, dispute what you're probably going to say. He did not torpedo Spain's World Cup campaign. The Spanish Football Federation torpedoed their World Cup campaign by sacking him on the spot. I know you think it was the right choice, but you're wrong, and they were wrong. That's absolutely not true. They spent years building up to that absolute pinnacle, and it's like, okay, what we're going to do is just before the end, we're going to throw off the coach and hire someone who is just a chimp in a suit, basically, in Fernando Hierro. Utterly dreadful. And then what happens? They fail, get knocked out by Russia, of all teams. Lopetegui arrives at Real Madrid. Lots of pressure now. You've got to do well, pal. You've got to do well. By the way, you haven't got Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm not going to sign anyone big. And now they went on the worst streak without scoring a goal in the history of Real Madrid.
Really?
Club de football. And what's that? 5 without a win. Now, after losing 2-1 to, who did they play at the weekend? Someone terrible. Levante. Having already lost to Alaves just before the break. They've got Victoria Pilsen in the Champions League.
Well, actually, at this point.
But at this point, exactly. And then, I mean, we wrote last week that the key game is, for them, was going to be the Clásico this weekend. And it sounds like, I mean, even if he makes it to the weekend, he might not make it to Monday.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
First of all, the one thing, I mean, imagine being in his position, I suppose. This could have been the greatest years of his life. We got a great career, a football career. And I said he's arguably completely scuttled himself at the top level. But the one thing, I was talking to someone connected to Madrid last night, and they were saying, this thing of Perez in general, that when he wants someone like that, and it's, he's absolutely ruthless in that way, and he's very much a kind of dictator for that club. In that when he wants someone, and this is one of the reasons they didn't get De Gea, because De Gea never submitted to the media campaigns or the kind of want away campaigns in the way Madrid would have idealised. But Perez basically demands, and it's one of the reasons I think ultimately that Spain decided to dispense with Lopetegui, that he demands you go all in for them. You have to commit every, it's Madrid or nothing, it's, and it's 100% Madrid. And then as soon as things go wrong, Perez will so readily discard you. There's a lot of talk, basically, that they don't think Lopetegui's up to the level. And I think one thing about him was, he was just one of those coaches that suited the circumstances of international football, and suited that team, because you don't need to do as much, but he kind of found nice kind of tactical shapes and all the rest of it. Do you remember we were in Chelsea 2015, in Porto, Chelsea 2015,
yeah.
And he did beat Chelsea that game.
They did, but it was quite easy to beat Chelsea at that point.
Yeah.
And he was really boring, so yeah. I've always held that against him. What do you, like, is it anything specifically he's done wrong, or is he the wrong sort of character, or
to be fair to him, I think
the situation's a joke.
Yeah, well,
come on,
I was told that one reason Zidane, I mean, even beyond the fact that Zidane was on the verge of being sacked before the last 16 game last season, one of the reasons Zidane decided to leave was because he knew that team has reached the end of its cycle, that there's too many players in
the
30s. He knew they're going to sell Ronaldo and that they weren't going to properly replace him.
The journalists that know Zidane have actually written this weekend that Zidane saw this coming.
Yeah,
really. Like literally, like in those words, that Zidane saw this coming, and kind of that's why he wanted out. We said in the summer, this is going to be a difficult job for whoever takes it on. And that was before they've even sold Ronaldo.
And I think, I mean, this is the other thing with the Ronaldo sale, I suppose, why it came at a particularly bad point, actually, for Madrid, even though we all thought the summer, well, maybe it's the right time to get rid of him, well, especially given events. But even if your team is underperforming and you have a 40-goal-a-season striker, he'll bail you out so much. And that's what happened with Madrid last
year. Yeah.
They play awfully. Oh, and here's Ronaldo, 70 minutes to go.
Well, that's the thing. Is the perception about Ronaldo is scores in the big Champions League games and scores like 4 goals when they beat Alaves 6-0. But the reality actually was there were so many games when Real Madrid are like struggling, like 0-0 against Rayo Vallecano or something like that. And then he just pops up with like 83rd minute, 87th. See you later. 2-0. It looks like a regulation win, but it was anything but.
Yeah.
And it's those games really that they have struggled with this year to convert. They haven't had anyone at all who's looked like standing up in those games where it's a little bit difficult and saying, come on, lads, this is only like whoever, Racing Santander, let's go and win.
So do you think they'll get a like an interim guy for the rest of the season and then a proper Matt?
Like, it looks like it's going to be Solari.
Well, I just before I came in, I just read that apparently the plantel are not that impressed with Solari.
Sorry, who?
The squad. Santiago Solari is the current second team coach.
There's a few things there, and as you will read in the Independent today, there, a few of them want Conte and Perez interest, but Conte would want more than a year contract.
Mm-hmm.
What they give, because ultimately Madrid will want to go back in for Pochettino. With the Mourinho thing, I've heard Perez would be intrigued. We'll come back to what you're saying about the squad, that he will basically, Perez will put any decision before the key members of the squad, and there's absolutely no chance that Sergio Ramos is going to.
So you think Ramos would veto the return of Mourinho?
Yeah.
I still think, I think they'll get Conte.
It just seems too perfect for Conte. Like, Conte just needs to get on the phone to Chelsea, sort out your severance, and then...
Well,
like,
isn't he being paid a salary rather than getting severance?
Yeah, I think that's it.
You know, he is, but like, you've already got a load of money. This is the opportunity to go and manage Real Madrid. Like, I know it's not the usual Real Madrid job. However, he's a very good coach, Conte, and I think
league.
Yeah, yeah, legit. So if I was Conte, I'd go and get it sorted. I know Milan are sniffing around him now because Gattuso, still a lot of question marks over if he's any good.
Do you think getting Conte would preclude them getting being in the mix with Pochettino?
Depends on the sort of deal they get with Conte, I suppose. And then you've got the Euros, right? Spurs.
Yeah.
Spurs can be really difficult. And again, if, you know, if Mourinho did go at the end of this season or whatever, then I guess Manchester United would push hard for him.
Quite a nice situation there for Pochettino. But he is ultimately Ed Woodward's ideal choice. He's Florentino Perez's ideal choice. I mean, that's a nice situation to be in. Two of the three biggest clubs in the world. Right? Absolutely desperate.
But that's the work he's done. And after the break, we will discuss some Champions League stuff ahead of quite a big week.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Another thrilling advert to keep you engrossed in the Indie Football Podcast. In part two today, we will be discussing the Champions League because it is the greatest football competition on earth, Miguel.
From the last 16 on. Although it's actually been a good group stage this year. Yeah, I think so far.
So where are you going this week? What's the plan?
To Old Trafford tomorrow, or today, for Ronaldo's return.
Manchester United, Juventus, the biggest game of the week in the Champions League, probably.
And for reasons that people didn't expect either, given this story that we can't avoid.
Well, so we can't avoid it, so let's talk about it. Do try not to say anything that's going to get us sued in the meantime. What I think is important here is I think Man United were a little bit tone deaf in still trying to sell this as Ronaldo's return, even after all the stuff. No, fair enough. I mean, but that isn't really a competition. Juve, about as tone deaf as you get. I mean, them and the Portuguese Prime Minister, or is it Portuguese Prime Minister or President? I never remember which one. One of them said something terrible. I think everyone else, I mean, we've seen the sponsors who are all deeply concerned, disheartened. Their direct quotes, Nike, EA Sports, all of the usual Ronaldo sponsors that have kind of invested a lot of money in, basically been attached to his image, are now concerned about what that might mean for them. So the Las Vegas police have reopened their investigation into allegations made by Catherine Mayorga over an incident in 2009. She alleges numerous things, including sexual assault, battery, and he still vehemently denies them. And this hangs over him as he heads back to Old Trafford, Miguel. What I think... We were expecting him to go back and there to be an incredible ovation for him. I still get the impression that will probably happen.
Yeah, I think so as well.
And it might just leave a sour taste in the mouth.
The one thing about stories like this, I suppose, and maybe public perception, ultimately, regardless of the details that we have, it hasn't gone to court. And so there's not exactly a conviction, say. So ultimately, I think for people, I suppose, that you know aren't necessarily invested in these stories, or won't go into the detail that we have to professionally, it just creates that grey area, which means they can still, you know, think of a figure like this the way they've always done, which is as a Manchester United hero.
Mm.
I've been quite intrigued by Ronaldo's mentality and how it relates to his performances through all this.
Well, it's hard to gauge too much because, you know, he's still playing for Juve and they're still doing well. You know, it's not necessarily a weekly challenge in Serie A. This will be an interesting challenge because, I mean, from the football point of view, this Man United team at home against Juve in the Champions League. So Juve probably the slightly stronger team. Yeah. United at home. Who do you think are favourites?
2 weeks ago I said Juve by distance. Now
I'm how are Juve performing in Serie A at the moment?
Same.
Just winning all the time. Yeah.
I mean, do you... Do you see United capable of winning this? You have 4 points clear at the top of Serie A.
Yeah, I think they can. United at home in Europe. It's one of those ties that actually, it's quite fascinating. It's actually, even though they met so many times in the 90s, they haven't met properly. There's a novelty about it again, actually. Because it's a matchup we haven't seen for a while.
It's vintage Europe, like.
It's vintage, yeah, without being exhausted in that way.
Yeah. Do you think Juve are kind of past their best? Like, the best years of this Juve team are behind us now?
Well, it's an interesting question because this has to be... They're in a win-now mode, right?
Yeah, but they have been for about 4 years.
Yeah, but... And in fact, you know, the whole point of signing Higuain was that Higuain was the ultimate win-now signing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, they've just trumped that with the ultimate win-now signing. I mean, the thing is that Juventus and Man United can actually play out a draw here and it suits them both because of the results against Valencia. So there is a chance for both of them to go through, which is probably good for the competition, certainly good for sponsors and stuff. But do we think Juventus are actually good enough to win the whole thing?
Yes.
Because they have to be. They're built for this.
Because it's quite... so many teams underperforming. I still think City are the best team in Europe, capable of the highest levels, especially this season. But it's a knockout competition, so... And it may be in a situation that if it does come down to it, Juventus' recent experience in Europe can have a bit of an effect.
Yeah, I'm thinking... I think City were the best team in Europe last year, but... They were up against much more experienced sides, but given the crisis at Real Madrid, crisis at Bayern Munich, and how bad Barcelona are, like the onus on City to win it is even stronger than it was last year.
What do you mean Barcelona being bad?
It's not very good, are they?
I mean,
and the
they're probably. I mean, they're probably like the second best team in the Champions League at worst.
But so I do think like Juve could be one of City's more realistic challengers.
Yeah.
They?
Yeah.
If they did play, then Juve would have the experience of having lost the 2015 and 2017 finals.
I still think Atletico Madrid are going to be in the mix enormously. Like, I just think you can't.
And I think they're one team. People talk about Liverpool, but I think City would not want to play Atletico.
Yeah.
The Champions League as well. Whereas now, everything we talk about in relation to teams now would matter in the course of a league season because it kind of feeds into the table and all of that. But with the Champions League, what we're saying now could be completely irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Actually mean something in March,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
because like Barca, Bayern, Real Madrid, Bayern and Real Madrid could have better managers, and then in 6 months time they could be really good. Like, how often do bad teams win the Champions League? Like,
Bayern are sticking by their manager. They said they're going to stick by Niko Kovac. I mean, you saw the absolute ludicrous stuff that Uli Hoeneß came out with the other day, suggesting that he was going to sue some media for some fairly well justified criticism of Manuel Neuer, who's been rubbish so far this season, and not just a bit sloppy, but has like made mistakes that have contributed to goals that have caused defeats, you know, and with Hummels and Boateng as well, who have also made mistakes that have led to goals which have led to defeats. And then in the same day, he was talking, they're talking about why he sold Juan Bernat in the summer, and he said Bernat on his own cost us that game, and it was clear he was not at the level of Bayern if we want to win the Champions League. It's like, what were you just saying about criticising players? Like, you shouldn't be allowed to criticise players. Wind your neck in. But Bayern are not, for me, even close. It's like, they look old and slow. Kind of what you worry about with Juve, that they've got too many old players. They've got too many... There's not enough...
But old players can win the Champions League.
But where's the vibrancy? Where's the dynamism at a time when football has never been so dynamic?
There's actually... That Munich generation... Okay, they won a World Cup, obviously. But in terms of the club game, should they regret not winning... Whatever the debate about Pep Guardiola there, but that generation...
Yeah. There have been so many times... Yeah. To have only won one Champions League in this decade is incredible, because every year they get to the semi-final.
They should have won it with Pep.
I always look at them on paper and think, these guys are going to win. They've got great players in every position, and they always screw up. They always end up losing in like hilarious circumstances in the semis. Like they're, I don't know whether
they were twice they've been robbed against Madrid. Now, to be fair,
So the which one do you mean?
Last season, well, actually 2 seasons ago, when they got well beaten at home, but then came back brilliantly and had it was right in the balance. It was 2-1 to Munich in Madrid, so it was 3-3 in Madrid, and then 2 big decisions went against them, and Ancelotti was fuming afterwards. And then last season, when they pushed Madrid right to the limit in the semis, did they lose the first leg again? I think they did.
There's not a team that I think that they. So when I went to against Gladbach, I always try and talk to the local journalists who cover the team all the time to try and get a bit of like a take a temperature sort of thing. And all of them, the thing that pretty much everyone said was like that they should have renewed the squad in the summer, and they were close to doing it, and they kind of just put it off for one more year.
It's kind of amazing that Robin and Ribery are still on the team.
Yeah. But Ribery came off the bench and was their best player in that game. Like Ribery still adds a little bit of drive and spark. Robin was dreadful. I mean, as predictable and obviously a Robin performance you could ever see. Ball came to him a few times on the flank. Like they just showed him. They showed him the outside. He kind of fainted to the outside, tried to cut inside. Yep, thank you very much. I'll take the ball off you and walk away. And he just doesn't have the speed even to.
Yeah.
He can't go down the line against a player. He can only cut inside. He doesn't have the speed even to kind of leave someone in their wake. Like which when he was 23, but still looked like 40, he could zip inside and then kind of run in field and he had different angles to pass with. And now he's just got nothing.
James, who I do like, but he is kind of.
He's unpopular there, very unpopular.
Really?
He's basically the sort of signing you would never have associated with Munich.
Mm-hmm.
He's an indulgent signing. He's a bit slow. He's kind of it's all about glamour. Even though I think there is genuinely more to him, but he does kind of take the zip out of that team a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
And the other thing was that they're playing him in games where they're like, we need to break someone down. We need to find a pass to unlock a stacked defence. And he's not doing it. Like the ball comes to him in that perfect number 10 spot, and then he just kind of sprays it wide.
Yeah. Actually, when I did a piece last week about Van Maden being the wrong place at the wrong time, a perfect example of that is actually James.
Shouldn't have gone to Real Madrid in 2014.
Yeah, his career was in the ascendancy, and he went to a club where there was just no obvious place for him.
He was on a Ballon d'Or trajectory at that point, wasn't he? Anything else you want to say? Because I need to be out of here in 2 minutes' time.
I'm looking forward to PSV Eindhoven against Tottenham Hotspur on Wednesday, which is an absolute must-win for Tottenham.
They're on 0 points in their group.
Yeah,
Inter
after
and
those
Barcelona
two defeats
six.
So far, which they didn't play that badly in either game, but they're going to have to do better. They basically have to win to stay in the mix. But I'm kind of backing them to grind it out.
Yeah.
And next weekend, some big games coming up, including the Clásico. You're at Palace Arsenal, and then the Monday night is Tottenham versus Man City. So I guess next Monday we will preview Tottenham Manchester City, even though it won't have much of a shelf life. And we will review the Clásico. We'll probably talk about Julen Lopetegui sacking. I hope not.
Why would it? Since when were there bank holidays in late October?
Yeah. So Miguel has only lived here for like 6-7 years now and still not adjusted. But thank you for joining us as ever. Thank you to our sponsors. That's right, we don't have any sponsors. Thank you to Acast, who hosts the podcast. Thank you to all the people that help with the production. That would be just us. Jack, Miguel, thank you for coming.
Until
next week, remember to subscribe, rate, review, and we'll see you then. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.